And I think what's interesting and awesome, this is what influenced me to write about this in the quote you just mentioned, is that with complexity, they talk about this idea about being at or moving towards the edge of chaos. And I always talk about this and describe this as like that sweet spot, right? So when we have a chaotic system, it continues indefinitely as being chaotic. But the idea with a complex system is that it eventually enters into a new and stable pattern. And so when we look at projects, when we look at projects as being complex, what we like to do is actually try to get the best of both worlds. So we want to get this idea about just getting close to the edge of chaos, but eventually then moving back to an area that's going to be a stable pattern. With that edge of chaos, that's where we can then start to really begin to become creative, and we can become inventive. We begin to problem solve also.
Hello and welcome to the ERP Organizational Change Journal podcast, brought to you by Nessel & Associates. Nessel & Associates is an ERP organizational change management firm serving the private equity industry. I'm your co-host, Jonathan Donald, the founder of Invert Ventures, a change strategy firm, and I'm here with my friend and colleague, Dr. Jack Nessel, the founder of Nessel & Associates, and the host of the ERP Organizational Change Journal podcast. The ERP Organizational Change Journal seeks to share expertise, insight, and create effective conversation to help guide ERP organizational change to real, measurable, and verified success, expanding what we can see so we can act in a more effective way. We seek to promote, connect, and foster relationships in the ERP organizational change community. The primary purpose of this podcast is to discuss, share, and reflect upon effective and efficient ways in which to realize ERP organizational change success. We will discuss the people, process, and technological components of ERP organizational change. This podcast is intended as a forum to study, share, and discuss ERP organizational change. We hope that you find this podcast useful as we share lessons learned, discover best practices, and explore the human elements and components of ERP organizational change. In this episode, we will discuss project management competencies and project complexity with newly PhD'd Dr. John M. Clark. Dr. Clark has over 20 years of experience as a management consultant, project manager, director, chief of staff, and chief information officer. He has extensive experience in both the public and private sector in the fields of project management, information technology, procurement, and budgeting. Dr. Clark has taught the graduate project management thesis course, principles of project management, risk management, procurement and contracts, PMP, CMP preparation, research, writing, and methodology. Dr. Clark is also a certified project management professional, PMP, a certified government chief information officer, and a Sigma 6 Green Belt. Dr. Clark is also a member of the Project Management Institute, the Project Management Institute Keystone Chapter, the Academy of Management, the Institution for Operations Research, and the Management Sciences. He is also a member of the Greenleaf Center for Servant Leadership. In addition to all of his academic work, he's certified in CITC research, and he is also actively publishing in peer-reviewed scholarly journals. Jack, I'm really excited to have Dr. Clark on today to discuss project management complexity.
Likewise. Thank you, Jonathan. This week, we will cover the first half of an in-depth two-part conversation with Dr. Clark. We will discuss project management competencies and project complexities and the edge of chaos. We'll also discuss transformational leadership, concepts of project management risk and uncertainty, and the latest information from the Project Management Institute, or PMI, regarding the Project Management Body of Knowledge, 7th edition. Dr. Clark, thank you so much for being on our show today.
Thank you for having me.
We have so much value for our listeners in this conversation that we feel it is worthy of two episodes. So thanks again for all you have to share with us today in episode 34. and we look forward to picking up again for episode 35 next week. We're really looking forward to this conversation. Let's get started here. Dr. Clark, my first question, what drives your passion to study and practice effective and efficient project management? Where did that passion come from?
Yeah, so when I look back at my career, my professional career, my first job was a management consultant in a state government here in Pennsylvania. And certainly a large part of that job was dealing with, obviously, clients, doing a lot of analysis, but was also starting to teach me the fundamentals of project management. And I think the other reason why I have a passion for project management is because I see projects everywhere. Part of what I think is happening just with organizations are undertaking projects to accomplish their objectives, accomplish their strategic objectives. And in some of the courses that I teach, when the individual doesn't have specifically a project, but needs some type of context to discuss and to learn about project management, we usually then narrow it down to maybe some type of an important activity or important initiative, even in one's home. For example, to maybe just to clean the garage. And so this idea that everything can be locked down or looked at from a project perspective kind of gave me this insight into this is so important, and that this is also not just to help the field of project management, but also to help the field of business, globalization. So I do think that this is a very important field for continued research and study as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
John, I'm going to quote based on an article you published in November of 2020. But before I do, I just want to highlight to our listeners, we're going to be discussing navigating the edge of chaos. And for those who've been listening to the podcast, this is an area of my deep curiosity. And so, John, I'm really excited that we have a project manager that's talking about managing chaos and being there in it. I think that's already an unusual space to be. So let me read the excerpt we have, and then I'm going to ask you a few questions about it. So you state, imagine that you are standing in front of a serene and calm pool of water. You decide to throw a stone in the water. The disruption causes ripples to emerge, which spread away from the epicenter. Eventually, the ripples begin to dissipate. The water emerges into a new and stable pattern. The pool of water is a metaphor for the behavior found in a complex adaptive system, since it demonstrates how tension disrupts stability, which eventually reorganizes into a new and stable pattern. Complexity scientists call the moment preceding a new pattern as the edge of chaos. Evidence shows that project managers who can navigate the edge of chaos trigger creativity, ingenuity, and ultimately success in complex projects. And this is from Greenberg, Shane Strong, and Del Puerto, 2013. But how do they do this? The answer is possibly available by viewing the project manager as a leader. Through leadership, the project manager can tap the knowledge and experience available in an interconnected team, end quote. So, John, I love the quote, and let's dive in. Tell me, how do project managers traditionally respond to the edge of chaos? And what advice do you have for them and all leaders to be more mindful and allow the edge of chaos to actually help them create project success?
Thank you for that question. So I'd like to take it from two different perspectives. Let's look at it more so first from the perspective of how do we as project managers traditionally look at the edge of chaos, or just with chaos in general. And the literature actually indicates that the traditional way of looking at projects and being a project manager is to actually try to avoid chaos, perhaps even try to mitigate chaos or even suppress it.
Sure.
A lot of that is based in on what are known more so as deterministic types of models, basically very sequential, very linear in terms of the thinking and then the approach also. But when we start looking at complex projects, we begin to realize that they are actually non-deterministic. They are non-linear. And that's because there are all of these uncertainties that begin to emerge in the complex project itself. And so it actually, some of these traditional ways of even instructing our project managers in the past, they actually could be detrimental to the project. If you begin to suppress or maybe even try to avoid some type of a chaotic situation, it's still there. It doesn't exactly go away.
Sure.
Yeah, I always think about one way of relating this is, like, for example, when we procrastinate. If we procrastinate, we're just not getting to the real heart of the matter. We're not doing that for some reason, but the problem is still there. And so it's the same with chaos in the project itself. And some of this also, from what I had written, it's influenced by the understanding between what is chaos and also then what is complexity. Think about something as being chaotic. It's, first of all, it's definitely, it's unpredictable, but it also, believe it or not, is considered in some forms, some scholarly forms, to be still deterministic. It's based on this idea, yes, believe it or not, when a gentleman named, I think it's Lorenz, he's actually a meteorologist, I believe, from MIT. Back in the early 70s, computing power has started to advance, and he started to look at the weather forecasts and the accuracy of the weather forecast, and he saw that over a period of time, if you're looking at one particular forecast, its accuracy begins to diminish over that period of time. And it kind of makes sense intuitively. But he started to think about, okay, why is that the case? This is where we more commonly call it the butterfly effect, which I'm sure many of your listeners have even heard of before. The idea is that there are these minuscule disturbances, right? And that because of these disturbances, they cause then some type of a domino effect or a cascade effect, which then eventually magnifies into something significant. I think that Lorenz had described that the butterfly flapping its wings in, I think it was Italy, actually causes tornado to occur then eventually in Texas. So you start to see this chain of events. I know.
It's crazy.
And, yeah, and the idea is that, remember, it's deterministic. Why? It's because if we knew what each of those minuscule disruptions were, we could still then predict eventually, like, for example, the tornado to occur. That's just not possible in this world. That leads into this idea about complexity. And I think what's interesting also, and this is what influenced me to write about this in the quote you just mentioned, is that with complexity, they talk about this idea about being at or moving towards the edge of chaos. And I always talk about this and describe this as like that sweet spot, right? So when we have a chaotic system, it continues indefinitely as being chaotic. But the idea with a complex system is that it eventually enters into a new and stable pattern. And so when we look at projects as being complex, what we like to do is actually try to get the best of both worlds. So we want to get this idea about just getting close to the edge of chaos, but eventually then moving back to an area that's going to be a stable pattern where we can then function, we can then operate normally. And there, believe it or not, there are actually people called complexity scientists. And what they say is that with that edge of chaos, that's where we can then start to really begin to become creative and we can become inventive. We begin to problem solve also. And I think that one of the other reasons why we do that is because we have to, because of the situation itself, we need to be adaptive. For example, the pandemic and how people had adjusted, they had adapted. And from that, we started to see new types of ways to deal with the situation. And unfortunately, it's still going on in many parts of the world. But like, for example, I remember starting to see about different types of masks or masks that have the band will go around the head rather than just going over the earlobes, right? So what happened is a good example of complexity at play because people need to come up with certain types of new ideas and just think outside the box also, being flexible, being creative. And that's how we then deal with complex situations. And I would argue also with difficult situations. That's what I meant by that metaphor.
Yeah, John, I really loved your answer here, and I could listen to you on this because I share an interest here. I would almost call that transformational levels of complexity. But I want to get your take on this because for me, it's one thing to understand it cognitively in my head. It's another thing where I'm sitting in a boardroom and walking that edge of complexity. And sometimes I interact with project managers who, if they're in a chaotic situation, there's already a mindset that they've failed. And so for a industry and position that I sometimes feel is so focused on preventing the edge from emerging, how do you create the mind shift and set needed to actually be able to utilize what you've, I think you've just beautifully described?
So it really starts with the leadership and the management. They have to, first of all, realize that. Once the leadership begins to see that the people begin to have the confidence and the environment and the culture to support, just trying to be taking some type of informed risk, that will lead to creativity and to problem solving as well. I'm a strong believer in that if your leadership starts to see that, then they can begin to support that as well. And this, you mentioned about this idea about transformational leadership. Well, how do we transform? How do we transform the individual? How do we transform the organization? It's by trying new things. So if these leaders want to be able to try new things, they got to have an environment and culture that supports that as well. And
yeah.
We can certainly talk a little more about then their leadership, but it has to be able to support that.
Yeah. In fact, John, I would like to discuss that idea of leadership a little bit more. But what a fascinating topic, insightful answer to Jonathan's original question. And I really like Jonathan's follow up. And I do agree. And so I want to talk to you more and drill down a little bit in terms of this idea of leadership and specifically transformational leadership, which, you know, as you'd mentioned, I think that's critical. I do want to share, Dr. Clark, in the same article that Jonathan had mentioned, the Navigating the Edge of Chaos, you also mentioned, and let me share this quote, you state that, quote, leadership is a relational pattern which integrates motivation and direction. People are typically constrained to a self-individualized perception of the self without external motivation. Using transformational leadership attributes, the project manager is capable of motivating project team members to transform them at the individual level through modeling and challenging intellectually. Evidence shows that project managers who are confident in interpersonal and intrapersonal skills model behavior which transforms team members into becoming creative collaborators. I really like that quote. I think that's really well said, Dr. Clark. But can you share with our listeners, what did you mean exactly by this idea of transformational leadership, and as opposed to what other types of leaderships?
Absolutely. So with transformational leadership, it's based on the research of Avolia and Bass. Back in the 1990s, they had actually developed what they called then the full range of leadership, which basically described that most leaders then will have attributes of being transformational, also transactional, and also laissez-faire. When somebody says that they are a transformational leader, basically what they're saying is that that individual is having then the behavior and the attributes that there are two parts to it. One is that that leader sees the potential in each one of those individuals, the people that are following the leader, and that that leader will then begin to exhibit those types of behaviors, those types of expectations, and be the model for those that are following a leader to replicate, to emulate. And by doing that, those people then begin to transform. The leader also, and this is important, has to sincerely see, authentically see, that potential in individuals. It's not just a matter of them saying, well, I want you to start doing something new. No, it's because I see the potential in you to do this. And as a result, then, okay, that individual will be transformed. And by transforming the individual, you they're going to be then obviously transforming the organization. The organization and the project team become better as a result of transforming then the individual. So that's the idea with transformational leadership. Typically what they do is they describe it on a range. So transactional, I always think of transactional as the other side, even though laissez-faire really is. But transactional, it's more dealing with, I think, the way we look at traditional types of leadership, where if I incentivize you to perhaps do this work, or like I'll give you some type of an award or some type of a bonus if you do excellent work, then that will motivate you to do better. And I think there are a lot of flaws with transactional leadership because that intrinsic value begins to deteriorate over time. So somebody is doing something for $10 now. Well, that motivation is not going to remain. It's not going to be always $10 and they'll still do the work. No, what would happen, what's more meaningful, is to motivate the individual to try to improve and become a better person, part of the team or part of the organization, to become more of a valuable part of the team itself. And I think that that's more sustainable. And that's the idea behind transformational leadership. They also mentioned laissez-faire as another part of this range of looking at leadership. Laissez-faire is basically where I've hired you to do this job or being maybe the project manager. And so just leave me alone. You do the work. If there's a mistake, then you're going to hear from me. The way I look at it, complete absence of leadership in a laissez-faire type of leadership style. And people do it, and it works for some people. I think that in most situations, particularly in, I think, complex situations, a laissez-faire type of an approach is going to be very poor. So certainly transformational leadership, I would think, is a mechanism, is a leadership style that gives or encourages then this idea of improving oneself. And the way we can tie that into complexity, when you start looking at how do we handle complex projects, well, and certainly some of this we'll talk about and we'll talk about my dissertation, but we need to be, first of all, building relationships. We need to also be flexible and adaptive as well. So if I'm the transformational leader and I know I'm going to have a complex project, I'm the project manager maybe, and I'm going to tell them, my team members, that look, there's some of you, and you definitely do this on a more one-to-one basis, but you say, look, I want you to think about becoming flexible. Maybe you're somebody who's by the book, right? I know we're going to be having a very difficult project. And to think outside the box, think about being adaptive instead of then just sticking to whatever the manual says, in other words. And if you give that kind of an idea, I do think that then you tie in some of these ways to navigate and manage complexity, even at the project team level, using transformational leadership. And it's interesting you mentioned about transformational leadership. I was originally going to study leadership and even transformational leadership in relation to complexity, because I saw there were a lot of connections between the two and some of those just mentioned here. I also quickly realized that there are several types of leadership styles that are available. And what actually became more interesting was looking at it from a project management competencies perspective. Because some of the attributes, some of the aspects dealing with leadership and communication, they're also found in project management competency. You also asked me about different leadership styles, other leadership styles as well. So again, when I was still in the early stages of developing my research, I had started to consider some other leadership styles. Are there some others that could deal with the characteristics of a complex project? And I started to come up with, for example, servant leadership. And I'll tell you what that is in a minute. Servant leadership, shared leadership, and also then more recently, I started to find works regarding complexity leadership. And so I started investigating each one of those. The one thing that was the same in each one of those leadership styles, it goes back again to this idea about relationships, building relationships. Now, it takes different perspectives on how to build those relationships. What is the motivating factor of why they're doing that? But they all came back to building relationships. We can certainly elaborate on that a little further here when we start talking about complexity and how to tie them to project management competency. But that's the idea behind some of these other leadership styles. Very quickly, with servant leadership, when we say that somebody is exhibiting servant leadership, we're saying that that person, being the leader or maybe the project manager, is giving oneself. Giving of oneself in terms of the skill sets, certainly the time, the energy. And why is that person doing this? Because that person wants to improve the team members, the followers. They then will see that dedication and then begin to reciprocate that as well. That's the idea behind servant leadership. I always think about being a teacher as being somebody who's using servant leadership. You're dedicating your knowledge, you're dedicating your time to students to make them better. Shared leadership, I thought was interesting. That was one leadership style early on I was really thinking I was going to be starting to use. The idea with shared leadership is that the leader has the humility and also the confidence to share that leadership with others and to understand that others that others have maybe even better knowledge, better experiences, or better abilities than you as the leader. So that idea, that responsibility of leading the project, it begins to shift to where the individual is better placed in the team will then take that responsibility. So it's a very interesting leadership style. I also think if it's not managed well, and I also think that if you don't have the right set of people, it can be disastrous as well. And the last one was complexity leadership, and that's the one that really influenced me in terms of how to look at complex projects. One of the salient points that came out of that was written by Dr. Olbeam. She had written actually a book on complexity leadership, and she said that to manage and navigate complexity, the team and then the individual or the project manager has to behave like a complex system. So the project itself is already complex, meaning that it's always changing, it's always morphing and emerging into different types of characteristics and different types of properties. Well, then the only way to counter that and then to manage that is that the team itself has to also be adaptive, to be also flexible, to behave as a complex system.
Right.
And when I saw in my research, we using project manager competencies, that's how you can also then, using some skills from the project manager, you can begin to set or establish a mindset in your team so that you as an entire or a holistic type of a team are acting and behaving like a complex system yourself. That way, then, you can navigate and successfully manage complex projects.
What rich insight, Dr. Clark. I think this is a topic, this idea of leadership attributes and different types of leadership is something I'm fascinated by and have studied in depth. And I think there's an opportunity here. Certainly like to have you back really to dive into this idea much more. I think it's a very important idea and just a lot to discuss here. So thank you for that insight.
Dr. Clark, you can't see my face, but there are times in our conversations where I've got a big smile on my face. This is one of them because I really love the interconnection you're making between leadership, modeling, way of being, how leaders show up, and what kind of results they can create on projects. And so this is an area I spend a lot of time on. And I'll share with you the single greatest metric I've found for understanding how well a team can survive in complexity is to what degree the leader is modeling the desired behavior, mindsets, and ways of being.
Yeah.
I think this is really fascinating. I also want to highlight from our listeners, there were a few researchers dropped in John's answer, and we'll try and put those in the show notes for you. And there's a couple other conversations that we've talked about vertical development and leadership perspectives that go really hand in hand with what Dr. Clark just mentioned. So there are resources available. With that, I really want to take this conversation and explore risk and uncertainty and its relationship with modeling. So yes. In another article you wrote, I'm going to read this for our listeners. The concept of risk and uncertainty are associated. Project management experts generally agree that every project possesses some degree of risk as well as uncertainty. The standard risk model involves identification, analysis, response, monitor, and control has been investigated extensively. There's ample evidence that risk management, when properly applied, improves the likelihood of project success. However, traditional project management considers uncertainty and complexity to be sources of risk. Using traditional risk management, measures are taken out to control or avoid. These strategies have shown to be counterproductive since uncertainty and ambiguity are fluid and emergent. It's generally accepted that uncertainty and ambiguity in projects is rising due to globalization and technology. And for our listeners, this is my ad. This would be where you would think about VUCA, uncertainty, volatility. Returning to the quote, possible traditional risk management approaches are inadequate considering the modern project. So, Dr. Clark, I'm loving that you're presenting this really challenging perspective of project management's fit for current complexity. But can you tell us more about this idea that project management uses risk as a measure to control and the projects that they're facing are now so complex that the use of control is actually counterproductive? So A, how is it to realize that as a project management person? And B, how do you begin to set up other project managers for success, given that the hammer they may have might actually be counterproductive in the house they want to build?
Right. So, very good question. So the impetus for my thoughts on writing that, they stem from Dr. Carvalho. And again, she had indicated that the way that we look, or maybe the way we're even instructed as project managers to look at uncertainty is to try to avoid it. I teach risk management in some of my courses, and we go over the standard ways to look at risk. And we certainly talk about then the approaches that are available. One of those approaches actually is to avoid. But then I also mentioned to my classes as well is that, look, in the modern project is described as being very undefined, quickly changing. It's one of the reasons why Agile is becoming so popular. Because of those quick changes, even in customers' demands, the projects are becoming more difficult and becoming more complex. And so as a result, when you look at in the past where there's going to be some type of a negative event or negative threat, and then you take steps to perhaps try to avoid it, it doesn't go away. Matter of fact, because of the way that we're seeing with modern projects and because of the interconnectivity between clients and project manager and also then between organizations on a global scale, we start to realize that by taking a traditional approach of maybe trying to take steps to avoid certain type of an event may actually be detrimental to project because it may actually become worse if it's going to be avoided. So yeah, there's some more traditional ways of looking at particularly negative types of threats or events. They are going to be detrimental to the project in the long run. And they could even then spill over into other things that are outside of even the project itself. So that was the impetus behind it.
What I had written.
And it was even just a revelation for me because certainly I was even teaching this in my classes literally about avoiding certain types of risks. And when you start looking at complexity and things that are complex, it actually may be the wrong thing or the wrong type of a path to take to address then those negative events in the project itself.
Yeah, John, this is so fascinating because it's one thing for me to hear it, especially from a project manager. But as you've just noted, this has been taught as part of the core methodology for so long, and it might not be serving in complex situations by the research. So I'm really curious how this ties to how you as an individual and a project management leader in organizations actually start modeling, are our tools actually serving what we're trying to do? So how does that modeling piece come in when we might be counterproductive applying an old context or a useful context to something that might actually be counterproductive for what we're trying to create?
Absolutely. So that's one of the reasons why I'm also a teacher, because I do think that if I teach people some of the new ways of looking at projects, I'm helping then the project management community by doing that and then begin to think about things differently to model that behavior, which I think is essential dealing with the 21st century project and project environment. As you were asking the question, I was reminded of an article, and I forget the author's name, but it was something dealing with the two sides of the same coin. And the purpose of the article, and I share this with my students when we're talking about risk, is that the researcher had investigated an Agile project team that had always not just met, but then also exceeded the customer satisfaction or the customer's expectations. And they began to ask them, how were you able to do that? And in a nutshell, the reason for that is because the project manager had first established a mindset in the project team to take a look at where there were threats and then turn those and transform those into becoming opportunities. So think about in terms of strategies, not just to avoid, but then could you perhaps maybe transform that type of an approach into something that's going to be positive, not just for the project, but for the organization as a whole. I think maybe just because of my experience now in reading about different types of project management methods and approaches, one way I think is to encourage your project team members, and certainly project managers, to read more about what's happening in the field. It doesn't have to be scholarly articles. I would argue probably some type of a very basic business article would suffice. But to have them start thinking about what are the latest in terms of trends? I think that if we don't do that, then we fall into this trap of, I've learned how to manage projects and that's worked well in the past and it's going to work well in the future. And I think that's a fallacy in today's modern project. Again, as I'm talking this through here, one of the things that you may already know about also is that PMBOK 7 was issued a few days ago. I had a little bit of an advanced understanding of what was going to be included, so I had some time to think about it. I didn't get the actual book literally until 2 days ago. I just started to read it. But it has in there some of these same ideas that we're mentioning here. One of the real major distinctions between PMBOK 6 and PMBOK 7 is this idea about departing from processing and moving towards end principles. But I would suspect is dealing with some of these ideas we're talking about being then flexible, encouraging communication, encouraging reaching out and networking with all of your stakeholders, rather than sticking with then what were the typical processes at each stage of the project lifecycle. They're still there. They're still relevant. But what's more important is then these principles. And that seems to be what PMBOK 7 is moving towards. And my guess is that it will be in alignment with what I've been beginning to espouse as well and also talk about and also write about.
So Dr. Clark, let's talk about that a little bit more. I find your work so interesting and I really appreciate it. But regarding the PMI, the Project Management Book of Knowledge in the seventh edition specifically, which is what we're referring to, it appears that the newest edition centers on 8 performance domains, right? Involving the stakeholders, the team, development approach, planning, project work, delivery, measurement, and uncertainty. And you wrote, and I have to apologize, Dr. Clark, I have lots of notes on your work, and I don't recall exactly where I took this from. It may be your dissertation, but I am quoting you here, and that is, quote, in response, the PMI is preparing to issue the seventh edition of Project Management Body of Knowledge, which will represent a significant change in how project managers approach project management. This, as you were just referring to, Dr. Clark, you then say, this is what my doctoral research investigates, end quote. And I can tell you that we and myself and we being us at Nessel and Associates, we really liked your dissertation work. It was just a really neat idea and really interesting work. But I do know that the purpose of your research centers on, as you had mentioned, investigating the relationship between project management competencies and project complexity and in regards to project success. So it's just very interesting to me, your work, but I'm just curious. I just want to back up and then I'd like to take the remaining time here together on this interview to really dive into your work and share that with our listeners. But before we dive into some of the details of your work, what inspired you to study this specific topic? Obviously, I think you found something in the previous version of the Project Management Body of Knowledge that wasn't addressing the way that we approach project management. And then perhaps the seventh edition helps get us a little bit farther in terms of, you know, this idea of project management competencies versus project complexity. Am I at all correct with that statement?
Absolutely, yes. The impetus or the genesis for the research itself is actually much more basic. But once you start looking at that and thinking about, okay, how does this relate to PMBOK 6 and also PMBOK 7, there definitely are some similarities and some relationships as well. And I'll definitely elaborate on those. At a very basic level, what I was saying before, that when I was originally looking to try to develop my research, I was thinking about it in terms of complexity and also then leadership. I knew from a very early stage in my doctoral studies I was going to be looking at complexity. There were two courses at the very beginning of my doctoral study that really impressed me. One was, title of the course was Images of an Organization. And that course showed different ways of, first of all, start with with our very basic or very traditional ways of looking at organizations, management style, decision management models, for example. But then it began to evolve into where do we see things going in the future. And I became exposed to this idea, which is known as general system dynamics, which was really the works of a Dr. Berkenfleet. I think that's how you pronounce it. He had studied back in roughly the 1950s and 60s, he started to investigate the different types of life forms. right? And he wanted to see how they are interacting with each other. He came up with these principles dealing with open systems and closed systems. So a closed system is basically a system where everything is self-contained within it. I think we've seen this, some examples in a bio bubble where everything is contained within it. There's no interaction outside of the bubble with the outside world. It can become self-sustaining, in other words. The project is actually what's known as an open system. And this is what really began to intrigue me with this idea about complexity. An open system means that the properties and the relationships and the attributes of the open system, they are interacting with other open systems, both internal to that open system and also external to the open system. We even see that, like, for example, in our solar system. Each one of the planets is considered its own open system within then the solar system itself. You can even continue to go even further from that. So this idea about open systems, that began to really heighten my interest. And when I started looking at this idea about complexity, the ideas about complexity are rooted in general systems dynamics. And that actually became a key part of my theoretical foundation for my research. The other course I was taking at the same time was dealing with advanced project management principles. The first time that I had seen actually this idea about project complexity. Right? We've all used the term complexity or complicated types of projects in the past. We each have our own idea what that means. This is the first time I saw that it's a specific official, if you want to call it that term, to describe a type of project being complex. And I remember still to this day that I remember reading in it was a book by Wasaki. He had started to describe complex projects as being emergent and that they are being affected by hidden and sometimes invisible types of forces. And that really fascinated me. You have to think also, remember, I've been teaching risk management for a couple of years, so I teach certainly about then cause and effect. I teach them about root cause analysis. But then that really began to impress me that when we start talking about root causes, some of those root causes are going to be not identified, or they perhaps even evolve because the project's an open system. It's a living system. From the very beginning, I knew that complexity was going to be a focus of my research. So that's where the complexity part came into play. The project management competencies part was a little more interesting in that, remember, before I was looking at it in terms of leadership, I was having a difficult time trying to find an instrument, a validated instrument, a reliable instrument to measure project complexity. And some of this I began to realize is because of the very nature or just the way that researchers are looking at complexity. There are many debates on complexity. So I had the fortune to find an article written by two gentlemen, Naylor and Turner, and they had provided an instrument that could be used to measure project complexity. It was actually an instrument that they had designed originally to begin conversations with project managers on what is project complexity. And they did say in one of the articles that your perception of project complexity is going to be different from my perception of project complexity. Right? It's going to be still based then on our own personal experiences.
Right.
Yeah, our different education. So I think that feeds the debate also. What is the effect of project complexity on the project? It's debatable even in itself, although I'll talk about that when we start talking about my dissertation. But interesting is that when you look at some of their scholarly work, and I did have the opportunity to talk to Dr. Turner a couple of times in some Skype phone calls, and we discussed that, and it's right there in one of their articles, that we know that project management competencies, they affect positively project success. And there's all sorts of research and literature that supports that. We think we have an idea how project complexity affects project success. There's many schools of thought, but the general impression or the general understanding is that it negatively affects project success. But we don't know how does project management competencies used in complex projects, how does that then lead to or does that predict project success? And that's what became then the gap that I researched in my dissertation. That's how it evolved into what it eventually became something I think is very, very relevant.
Very relevant, very fascinating.
John, I have to agree. I think it's really cool. So listeners, we're going to shift the conversation a little bit, and we're going to talk about the specific thesis that Dr. Clark had. Dr. Clark, my understanding of the study and your PhD was to investigate the relationship between project management competencies and project complexity in the correlation of how much do these competencies enable complex project success. So what literature did you review? How did you go around researching this? And what principles did you end up seeing as a result of your thesis? And how do you interpret those principles today? And how do they inform your view on where project management's going?
Absolutely. So first, what was some of the literature that I had used or investigated? Again, early on in the dissertation research process, I certainly want to become much more familiarized with complexity. One of the things that I needed to do, both as part of the dissertation research plan and also with then eventually the actual dissertation, is to show that the literature is speaking about these topics in the here and now. We certainly don't want to be investigating something that was maybe relevant 20 years ago. So the first part was, I mean, it's all well and good that I'm interested in complexity, but I need to know, are others in the know, are they also interested in looking at complexity? And I definitely had seen that. I was able to find literature, even within the current year, multiple articles that were talking about project management, complexity, and also then dealing with and coping with complexity. I also started to become familiarized with some of these different ways of interpreting complexity. One of the things that I failed to mention before is that I had also thought from the very beginning that my research was going to be quantitative. So I was anxiously trying to find a way or an instrument to use that would obviously have to be then also validated that could be used to measure complexity. And literally, it took me maybe even, think about it, a year at least to try to find that right instrument. I had some possible instruments. I had found one, actually. Even I didn't really like it. Funny thing is, I had actually tested it out on some of my classes with risk management, because I always think it's important to talk to them a little bit about complexity. With complexity, there are, just like with everything else in the research world, there are different views and different perspectives. So some people look at they look at complexity as being more so dealing with those hard attributes, dealing with the number of people on the project team. So if you have a high number of people on the team or a high number of different types of skill sets that are needed in a team, then that's going to lead into some type of higher level of project complexity. And I understand that. But I also think that some of those, again, going back to some of these points I was talking about earlier about the relationships, the way that we also begin to associate and think about the project as an open system, we lose sight of that aspect by just looking at it from the hard, and sometimes they call it structural complexity perspective. And then again, I found this instrument by Mailer and Turner, and they broke up complexity into structural, which is kind of what we're talking about in terms of those hard types of complexity ingredients or causes. But then also they had another category. This is the real reason why I sought to see if I get the permission to even use the instrument, was dealing with socio-political complexity.
Ooh.
That's dealing with those relationships, right? And then you start thinking about and you read more about complexity, and you start to see that what causes complexity? Well, it's because we may have people with, unfortunately, different motives, different objectives on the project. Sometimes, unfortunately, those objectives may even be counterproductive to what we want to achieve on the project. We have, in stakeholder management, we have different types of relational positions of our stakeholders relative to the project. And unfortunately, because of those, maybe in some cases, opposing types of relationships that lead to complexity.
I just want to make sure I'm understanding this, and if I am, to highlight it for our listeners. So what you did in your research, which sounds incredibly unique from anything I've read on this, is to not just do structural complexity or social economic so I would call cultural complexity in organizations, you found a tool that includes both.
Yes, correct. They also included as well in their tool emergent complexity, which is then complexity that, just like with the properties of being complex, that emerges over time, it surfaces. It may not even been there when the project started. That's absolutely correct. That's the reason why I selected, and they are also more than gracious to allow me and permit me to use their instrument as well for the complexity side. And you're right. I think that a lot of the literature right now looks at complexity in terms of the structural side. And I don't have any evidence to support this, but I think that the reason why some research looks at or leans towards the structural side is because it's simpler to conceptualize. I can conceptualize very easily if I have a high number of people on my team. That's an easy way to even then evaluate it. But when we start talking about then the socio-political side, we have to then dig deeper and understand what is causing that. And from there, then we can start to figure out how can we then begin to solve that. So it's not just a matter of then determining how many people are on the project team. That's simplifying too much. And that's one of the reasons why I had some trouble with some of these other instruments that were out there. Let me talk a little bit about project manager competencies. That was the other thread, if you want to call it that, of my research. And when I started to look into project manager competencies, I quickly found that this is something that is actually being endorsed by the Project Management Institute. They even have their own project management competencies. I think they call it Project Manager Competency Development Framework, right, where they begin to coalesce their idea about project manager competencies between what I look at as being soft competencies and hard competencies. When we think about, like, for example, with PMBOK and the parts of PMBOK, and maybe the new PMBOK can be a little bit different, I suspect it's going to be, but the old PMBOK, going from PMBOK 6 and earlier, when we start talking about the hard side, that's what we're learning in PMBOK. Learning about how to manage risk. What are the processes for the communication management plan? What are the steps in developing your stakeholder management matrix, for example? When we start talking about the soft side of project management competencies, we're talking about some of those same points that I was referring to earlier. We're talking about complexity, relationships, leadership, communication, flexibility. Those are parts of, and PMI had already identify that as part of their overall development framework. So I instantly had seen that there is already some type of a structure, and there's also already obviously some type of research that's been involved in building this understanding about competencies, project management competencies. So those two threads, I certainly saw vast sources of literature, current literature, that were speaking about them. And the third one, just very quickly, was on success. I found that, again, there's a multitude of literature that are out there regarding project success. But what I also saw was the traditional way of looking at success has changed. We had traditionally looked at success as very simply, did the project meet the triple constraints? That evolved so that we start to include other aspects such as client satisfaction, team satisfaction. And then more recently, I started to see that there was now a consideration of sustainability. Sustainability not just within the use of the resources, but then also sustainability in the outcomes or deliverables of the projects themselves. Are they valuable? And that, I think, is a true representation of what is defining then project success. So I have found an instrument from Dr. Aga. We were mentioning about transformational leadership before. He had done research using an instrument to measure project success, which incorporated these points that I had mentioned, certainly the triple constraints, but also included client satisfaction, team satisfaction, which really is, I think, rare. We really don't think about the team being satisfied or, being part of the project, but I think that that's highly relevant. And then also this idea of sustainability. And that's a contemporary way, I would argue, of looking at project success as well. So all three threads, I found literature, current and relevant literature, and that informed me that this is an area that is necessary to conduct some type of research in.
And I just wanted to share quickly for our listeners, when Dr. Clark refers to PMBOK, in case you're not familiar with it, it is the Project Management Institute's Project Management Body of Knowledge, and the acronym is PMBOK. And also, Dr. Clark, we will share the Mueller and Turner. I have several articles that we'll put on the show notes, as well as any other articles that you referenced as well, as Jonathan had mentioned earlier. Just fascinating. Reminder, listeners, you are listening to part one of our in-depth conversation with Dr. Clark. Please join us next week for part two, episode 35.
Listeners, thank you for joining us on today's episode. We are incredibly excited and grateful to have friends, colleagues, and mentors join us on our podcast. We have an incredible lineup of guests, including ERP and organizational change speakers, authors, professors, researchers, pioneers in the field, practitioners, PE partners, business executives, ERP vendors, and organizational stakeholders. We invite you to leave us feedback and a review because we want to make this the most useful and insightful podcast you listen to, and we need your help to do so.
Thank you, listeners, for being with us again this week as we seek to, one, promote, connect, and foster relationships in the ERP organizational change community, two, contribute to the field of ERP organizational change, and three, bring research and practice closer together. Please join us again next week as we discuss the latest ERP organizational change research, practice, and stories. Our podcast will draw on knowledge from extensive research, collaborative learning, and practitioner expertise and experience.
From everyone here on the team, Jack, and myself, we wish you a great week, and we hope to see you again soon on another episode.
Hashtag the ERP Organizational Change Journal. Have a fantastic week.
Bye for now.